Hello, everybody, and welcome to Minute 93 of Season 5 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Mark Hofstadter of Movies, Films, and Flicks. Welcome back, Mark.
Good to be back, and I'm very happy that Rennie Harlan with this scene has entered the Exploding Snowmobile Club, which is exclusive club.
That's right. He did a great job. Because isn't that why we're here?
Oh, for the snowmobiles?
Of course, for exploding snowmobiles.
I was reading Exploding Helicopter, which, you know, I love the podcast, the site. And Rennie Harlan is in sixth place with four movies with exploding helicopters. That makes me very happy in this one. So he's had exploding planes. He's had exploding helicopters. He's blown up bridges, airplanes. Yeah, Rennie Harlan's blown up a lot of stuff.
That's right.
And I love that about him.
And it's great that this movie has a number of them.
An F1 car he blew up in Driven.
That's true also.
Which, you know what I love about Driven? He blows up an F1 car so comically big. Like, it's the most absurd explosion I've ever seen in my life, but it's beautiful. It's a gigantic explosion. And so is this one. And the geography is kind of weird in this scene. I'm not going to lie, but we'll start at the beginning.
Yeah. All right. Great. So minute 93 begins with Stuart changing his clips and ends with John crawling towards the gun in the snow. So, I mean, basically, we ended things yesterday for anyone who's paying attention. John was quickly gaining on Stuart and his men little by little. You know, we talked about how the fact that there wasn't really much going on in that whole minute, besides the fact it was like a chase. It was a never ending chase. You know, it was if there was it's like, you know, those what did they used to have at like Greyhound races? They would have like the fake rabbit. You know, stuff like that. And you're always at the same distance. So it felt that way here, too. You know, that the distance never changed. You know, which sort of makes sense, because if they're both driving snowmobiles that have a maximum speed of whatever it is, you know, they're all going to be gunning it. So that distance is, you can't make up that distance. It's not like one of them has a better snowmobile that my snowmobile can go faster than yours and I can catch up.
Mm-hmm. The only way McClane could catch up with them is if he's actually a great snowmobile rider, but he's not. Like, he's just a cop from New York.
Do you think he's ever been on one before?
I mean, he understands the physics of a snowmobile, and he does live in New York. So maybe he went to upstate New York sometimes, got on a snowmobile in winter. Like, a few times. He's been on a snowmobile enough to be able to do what he does. Because I've been on snowmobiles before. I mean, but this is action movie logic. So, no, he's never been on a snowmobile before.
Right. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, but it's also, you can look from the perspective that, you know, the snowmobile was still running when he shot Garber. So he didn't need to figure out how to start it or anything like that. Like, I was actually just watching today Magnum Force. Have you ever seen that?
I've never watched Magnum Force. No.
Okay, it's the second Dirty Harry movie, and at the beginning, he's trying to foil a plane hijacking, and you know, he says that the hijackers are asking for an international pilot to come and help them, to fly them wherever they want to go. So he volunteers and he puts on the costume of the pilot, and he's sitting there and he's pretending that he knows how to fly a plane, and at a certain point. You know, because they just have to do the takeoff. And at a certain point, the co-pilot turns to him and goes, "Do you know how to fly this plane?" And he goes, "No." And he like slams on the brakes, and then the terrorists fall forward, and he's able to take them out. So it's the same type of logic. You know, like, you don't have to know how to do something. You know, as you said, it's action movie logic.
And like, you know, you watch a movie like San Andreas, where Dwayne Johnson flies planes, helicopters, every type of vehicle. Like, he's like, "Oh, there's a plane there. I'll fly it. Hey, there's a helicopter there. I will fly it." I know he's a rescue chopper guy, but this people are so ridiculously overpowered in these movies, and I love it. It's like, but then I was also watching the scene too, and I was wondering why the gunman kept missing him. Like, they shoot probably several hundred rounds at him, and they mostly miss.
Well, throughout the entire movie, they're missing. Forget about that. These are highly trained special forces, and they all are missing. And forget about the fact whether they're using blanks or whether they're using real bullets. It doesn't make a difference at this point. But when we see them shooting real bullets, they always miss. I mean, even the fight that John had with Cochran and Miller, you know, in week three, these guys are supposed to be experts, and you know, they constantly miss. Cochran was able to shoot a deodorant can perfectly, but he couldn't hit John.
Yeah.
You know.
Action movie logic is wonderful. I think you just have to accept it. Because, listen, I shot an Uzi once, and I just blew up the base of a target. Like, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Like, I didn't even come anywhere near where I was supposed to be shooting. So I guess I could get why they missed, but these are also wildly trained people who do naked Tai Chi. Which makes them, you know, but it's kind of interesting in movies where you want the villains to seem like equals or intellectually superior or this, but then you have them miss with every shot. So it's, I don't know, but still, whatever. It's an action movie. It's a Rennie Harlan movie. A snowmobile explodes while jumping a semi.
Right.
That's just perfectly timed. It's amazing. And he does. And John McClane even does a little like, I'm going to move my snowmobile to the side so I don't get shot. Like, he does a side saddle not a side saddle, but he does like that trick on the horse where you hide behind the horse so it gets shot and you don't. He did that on a snowmobile. Well, John Wayne.
It's true.
They wanted geez, a ways. But I love it. It's, listen, Bill Sadler blowing up a snowmobile that is driven by Bruce Willis while jumping a semi is a pivotal moment in action cinema.
Yes.
And it's one of Rennie Harlan's best explosions. I'll give him that.
True. That's true. But we'll get there. Okay. Let's start with what's going on here. So Stewart changes, you know, puts the red clip in, which we all now know what that really means, that they're finally going to be shooting real bullets. But you'd think that that they would have changed it beforehand. You know, why would he wait until he stops to do this? You know, this is something that he knew at some point that he needs, you know, especially after Garber and Burke were killed. You know, at that point, you know, switch your clip. Don't wait. Yeah, I understand the point where you're having the whole theatrical facade, you know, with Grantsman. Okay, I can understand there you're going to use fake bullets and all that stuff. But once you realize that someone's really shooting at you and is chasing you, you should really, you know, do something about it. But they didn't.
It's for the audience, right? It was Rennie Harlan. You have to see that scene to understand the tape. Like, sure. It's one of those where audiences are dummies.
That's right.
And they're not going to understand. So it's more action movie. I'm not saying it's right. You are 100% correct. But I think it's just more of, oh, they're switching the tape because there's real clips and fake clips. And he has fake clips. And then he realizes it.
No, they needed to frame the shot for us to see him actually do it, you know, not while he's in motion, you know, so that makes sense.
Would it have slowed it down if they did it before they left? So before they leave, you have to stop and watch everybody switch their clips and then drive away. That maybe
it would have slowed them down. But again, they were still having this fake firefight. So they didn't want to risk using real bullets.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when they're running to the, you know, not enough snowmobile depot.
has there ever been a movie where the hero gets on a vehicle and just immediately crashes it? Like, so you and I are in an action scene movie, Rob, and we have to jump into a monster truck, manual monster truck, stick shift, everything. I would drive it into a wall. Like,
I wouldn't even get it moving because I don't know how to drive a stick shift.
Yeah, like,
you know, so ever since I saw Back to the Future as a kid, I've always said I've got to learn how to drive, you know, a stick shift, because if I'm ever in a situation where I need to get in the DeLorean because Libyan terrorists are chasing me, I need to know how to do it. But I never learned it. You know, so
We're in trouble if that situation.
I'm gonna be dead. I will be dead before that.
Can you think of a movie though where someone gets into like Pee Wee Herman, but he doesn't ride motorcycles, he just gets on a motorcycle and wipes out R.I.P. Paul Rubens. What? I can't think of
Dwayne Johnson. It's really funny that you mentioned that. I just watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure today.
Because
you know, Paul Rubin just passed away this week when we were recording. So I said I would watch it, and that's really funny.
That motorcycle wipeout is one of my favorite all time scenes. It's just way it's shot. Yeah,
I meant to do that.
Yeah, I can't think of many times where Dwayne Johnson, no, Jason Statham, no, Vin Diesel, no.
There's nobody. It doesn't make sense. Harrison Ford is the only one who will put Indiana Jones in the situation where he needs to figure out what to do, but he still manages. You know, like in even in Temple of Doom, okay, he's in a plane and he doesn't know how to fly. Okay, so he has to figure out what to do, but he doesn't crash immediately and die. You know, he just abandons it in the end. But by Last Crusade. By Last Crusade, he's learned his lesson and knows how to fly.
So he adapts. He's not just overpowered.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Interesting. But I mean, still.
But he also doesn't get flustered. You know, Indiana Jones doesn't get flustered in these situations. He tries to figure it out. You know, he looks at it and goes, okay, altimeter. You know, he knows the basics. So it's interesting. It's interesting.
I have a thought, but I'll share it tomorrow. Share it tomorrow.
Okay, but I don't think that there's – I can't think of any action movie where the hero gets in a car or some sort of vehicle and immediately crashes because it just doesn't make sense. In the world of movies, that doesn't make sense. You can't do that.
Yeah. Do audiences want to see that?
Maybe. Again, it depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we know, for instance, that there's a bomb in a car – and we know that if he turns on the ignition, it's going to explode. Okay, so maybe in that situation, if something happens beforehand, that the car doesn't start and he gets saved. So that could be the only possibility, you know, that I can think of for that type of thing. I don't know. But what happens right after Stewart changes the clips is even cooler because we get a shot of John coming from afar and we see Miller on his snowmobile and he like does a really cool spin and it basically looks like they're about to joust.
Yeah, it does. It looks like snowmobile chicken.
That's right.
Jousting.
To me, it looks like jousting. So what do you know about jousting, Mark?
No, I love jousting. I mean, as much as you can learn from medieval times and A Knight's Tale, that's what I know about jousting.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's it.
That's right. Okay, so jousting is a medieval and Renaissance martial game between two combatants, either on horse or on foot. You know, we mostly know about them from knights, and basically the participants experience close to 3.25 times their body weight in G forces when the lances collide with their armor. I mean, that's a lot. Wow, that's just completely crazy. Do you know what the word joust actually means?
I do not. What does the word joust actually mean?
Okay, well, it comes from originally a French word meaning joster, which basically means to approach or to meet, which obviously makes sense.
Huh. The meet, to approach.
That's right.
They're running at each other.
That's right. With lances that they're going to hit each other from afar. It was very popular in the 16th century, but in France, they actually stopped doing them in 1559 when King Henry II was killed in a joust accident. In England, it was very popular. They would have it at the events where they were crowning new kings and queens and stuff like that.
Game of Thrones, they love it too.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, do you know in Knight's Tale they put spaghetti strands inside of the joust, and so when it exploded, a bunch of spaghetti shoots in the air, dry spaghetti, to make it look like wood splinters.
That's really cool.
Yeah, right.
I like that idea. Yeah.
We need snowmobile jousting now.
Well, do you know that there's real jousting nowadays? They have groups that do like Actually, they're not real. They do practice jousting competitions, and they have all these tournaments since 1997. They've been doing them. A guy named Shane Adams formed a group called the Knights of Valor, where they go around and have tournaments of jousting. And there's even a TV show called Full Metal Jousting, which he hosted, this guy Shane Adams.
That's
You
fun.
know, yeah.
Oh, wait, Knight Riders. They joust on motorcycles. George Romero directed it. Ed Harris
Okay.
stars. It's about a group of like traveling Renaissance fair type people, but they ride motorcycles instead of horses. And
Oh,
people
wow.
go and show up. Like Stephen King has a cameo, and they just show up and they joust on motorcycles. And there's a whole King hierarchy. Ed Harris is in it. It's a good movie. I covered it on Movies, Films, and Flicks and forgot the Forgotten Film Cast.
Oh, wow.
So that's a movie I dig. So that's some good jousting right there.
Yeah, very
Motors,
cool.
that's automobile jousting.
That's right.
No.
No, it's
Motors.
motorcycle jousting. Motorcycle jousting.
Yeah, different.
Yeah.
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 That's vehicles with an engine jousting.
Right. Now, we didn't see Miller change his clip, but he apparently must have because he's shooting at John. He also misses him. You know, every shot
Point
misses.
blank.
Point
Point
blank.
blank.
I mean, John, I can
Now,
understand why he's missing because he's got blanks. You know.
Okay, that's the one bit I hate hating on. You can't just talk about action movie logic and then complain. But he, at one
Push
point,
can. Push can.
with a fully loaded clip, he is 36 inches away from John McClane with an automatic weapon, and he misses every single shot
That's right. He doesn't even
of.
hit the snowmobile. It's not as if, we see he punctures the gas tank or something like that, which you see a lot in movies. You know, people just randomly shooting and then you see a bullet hole near the gas tank and gas starts flowing out or something like that. Nothing. Misses everything. So yeah, it's a little crazy. I mean,
Was he hot?
we see some sparks, so he must hit something. Maybe he hits the windshield, but again, why would the windshield be bulletproof?
And if you're the head of this organization and you've handpicked all of these henchmen, right? And you see that from one of your henchmen, what do you think?
You're fired.
You know what? I might not even fire him because I'll be like, I have never seen anything like that before. So it must have been the wind or a fluke. Like, I have never seen somebody miss from that close. So maybe there's a poltergeist, or maybe there's, don't know, maybe he's protected John McClane, or maybe we're in a movie where
Maybe.
henchmen can't hit people. Like, I would. The fact that he failed so miserably and didn't even hit the snowmobile once, that's a fluke. So I would give this guy another chance.
Yeah, sure. Did you like the wheelie that John does on the snowmobile where he's only on one side?
Ridiculous.
He's just on the right hand side than the left hand side. And that's
Like,
it.
I love that. Yeah, I love that he knows how to handle that too.
Right. Of course, because again, he's already an expert.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess before.
I've been driving a snowmobile for 30 seconds. I'm an expert.
And by a minute, you are Olympic worthy.
Maybe he's in the Matrix and they just uploaded, is that
That's a good
possible?
point. Yeah, he's in the Matrix. That's what it is.
There you
And
go.
I do like that. Oh, no, we're not there yet. I'll talk about when we get there. So we're talking about the wheelie that he does,
Yeah, and
which he does
then
on purpose.
yeah, because he's avoiding the bullets. Isn't
McClane,
that what you do?
you rascal.
And then basically Stuart decides to take it into his own hands and Stuart just shoots at him and we see John basically flip from side to side on the snowmobile that sometimes it's on the right side, the right axis, and sometimes on the left axis. He's like jumping back and forth with it. So it's pretty impressive work. And
And
then we get a
Bill
shot.
Sather
Yeah.
shoots his vehicle at least seven times
That's right.
and the windscreen, and there's a huge like ball of dust where his snowmobile is getting shot, and he's
Correct.
fine.
That's right.
It's
And
amazing.
And then we see that not only is Stuart shooting at him, but Khan is also shooting. So we have the two of them in. And nicely done, we see that he has a clip. You know, we only see him for a fraction of a second, but he has a clip with a red tape on it. So they were pretty good about this. I've been trying to follow this in the movie to see if they make any mistakes with the red and blue, and they haven't. You know, they do it really well. I mean, obviously he's really shooting blanks, but that's, you know, and then they actually hit in front of John's snowmobile, and John veers out of the way. And then here's the scene that you were talking about at the beginning. You know, he happens to go over, I guess, a small embankment, which just happens to be right next to the highway. And then John gets to fly over this truck that just happens to be there. And Stuart keeps shooting, even though John's in the air.
That's when they hit him. They hit him at most likely the hardest spot to hit him. So
well, he's a sharpshooter.
Yeah, you're right.
He can only get the really you know, great shots. All the rest is
put him a mile away. Put him a mile away, and I'll hit it every time.
That's right. I'm farsighted. I can't hit something you know close by, but I can hit something you know 50, 100 meters away.
I mean, you know, for me, when I have time to think too much, I mess it up. So if a snowmobile is driving at me, and I'm just like holy crap. But maybe when he's going all the way away and I just throw a Hail Mary bullet, I could blow it up. Like, because you're just, you know, like last ditch effort. So,
correct.
Yeah, but he blows it up at the hardest spot in midair.
That's right.
Halfway over a semi, probably going 35 miles an hour or you know, whatever that, let's see, what's that in kilometers?
No, 35 miles an hour is about 50 kilometers.
Yeah. So, I mean, then he drills the gas tank. And
yeah,
causes a wild. Well, John's still on it, by the
That's
way.
That's right. We don't see John jump from it. That's right.
But I do like when he lands on the ground.
No. 1 second. If you watch it in slow motion, we see John fall back behind it. He's like above the truck in midair.
All right, let me look here.
Yeah, did they
get a stuntman to really do that?
Apparently, if you look at second 25, if you pause it, you'll see that John is basically behind the snowmobile or the stuntman.
Oh, okay, there it is.
But
blow that thing up still with him on there.
That's right.
That's some good stunt work.
And he should be very happy he didn't land on the truck or on the asphalt.
Or like a tree branch get impaled.
That's right. That's right. Like the story we told yesterday. You know, yeah, I don't know.
That's a good stunt right there.
That is a great stunt. And it's, I mean, Rennie Harlan talks a little bit about the stunt on, you know, on the commentary. He mentions the fact that this is, you know, he prefers to do practical stunts. And that's why, and, you know, when they thought of doing it this way, it was like, all right, let's do it. It's just great.
It looks great. It looks great.
Yeah. And it just bursts into flames. Yeah. Can you actually call that exploding helicopter? Because it is, you know, exploding in midair. We'll have to ask Will if it happens in midair, you know, what's the call?
I'm sure that would be he separates them pretty good. So I would definitely say that's an exploding snowmobile.
Right.
But what do you think about the shoulder snow work in here? Because the general has some pretty good snow on him. Have you watched that at all?
It's dandruff.
That's a lot of dandruff.
That's right. But yeah, and it makes you wonder where that comes from, because he wasn't that he was rolling around in the snow. But actually, it's from the drift of when he was driving a snowmobile, I guess.
It's just stuck to his shoulders?
I guess so. I don't know.
I guess snow works differently in this world.
Because they didn't. Maybe it was wet snow. Maybe it was wet snow.
Isn't all snow wet?
Different parts of snow are, you know, there's different amounts of how wet it is.
But it's all on his shoulders.
That's right.
But he hasn't fallen, and there's no other snow on him.
That's correct. So it could only be something that came from drift as he was riding.
It looks like a Yeti was giving him a shoulder massage.
Well, if you look at Khan's arm is filled with snow also, and then Esperanza has snow over his right arm where he got shot.
Yeah, but I know that's not something to be worried about, but I'm like, that's some interesting snow work.
Yes, that's right. It's true. And then, you know, we see them finish shooting, and then John is rolling in the ground, and he doesn't have any snow on him.
Yeah, no snow whatsoever. But he is selling his pain pretty good, though. He's like, oh.
That's right. Well, that's most of this minute is just John groaning and grunting. You know, there's two lines of dialogue in this whole minute. We're about to get to one of them in a second. You know, and then we see how that the truck was also not just a single truck. It had, you know, it was pulling another truck behind it. You know, making it seem as if like a train was going by, you know, obscuring their view. And then Stuart looks over and goes, "So much for the element of chance. Let's move out." So, you know, we don't have to worry about John McClane anymore. Let's get out of here. That's more or less what he's thinking. Yeah, too easy. Of course, you know, you should send one of your men to go make sure that John is dead. Look for the crisp, you know, John McClane.
I would just get on the snowmobiles and ride away because no one's going to expect that. Like, everyone's going to be like, oh, they're going for something else. I would just take the snowmobiles, steal a car, get out of there. Everyone's true. But then say they get on a plane and they get blown up. They should have snowmobiled to safety.
Probably. You know, right. Probably. But they think John McClane is dead. So, you know, you got to give him the credit for that as far as they're concerned, they don't have anything to worry about.
Rookie mistake.
That's right.
They've never been in a movie before.
No, they've never been in a movie with John McClane before.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what's left of his men, they get back on their snowmobiles and they decide to go out. Now, what's really cool is if you watch when Stuart starts moving on his snowmobile dips into the ground and it looks like a water ski by the way that it dips into the ground first before, and then it moves, then it like lifts up, you know, like you normally would see. If this was on water, then it would, you know, sink down a little bit, and then once you're moving, it would buoy up.
Hmm. So yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
he does some good work on that too, though.
Yeah,
some good steer. Snowmobiles are quite unwieldy. Oh man, yes. That snow is very. What is that? What is the snow that McClane's on? It's very salty.
Well, because it's not real.
Yeah, it just looks like salt.
Yes, it does. And that's why he's holding his eye, because he got salt in his eye.
Oh, good call. And listen, this is, I have never noticed that. So, I mean, I've watched this movie for decades and I've never worried about the snow. It's just upon further thing. But as far as fake snow goes, this is A+ fake snow.
Yes. Yeah. Because most people won't notice that there really isn't snow here. And that's what's cool about it.
Exactly.
Because you expect that it's going to be real snow. And then John starts groaning a little bit and picks himself up. You know, he you know, typically he has to, you know, start, you know, complaining about his aches and pains and stuff like that. And then we see a shot of the burning snowmobile just to show us that he has no way of getting back because his snowmobile is burnt beyond any recognition.
Yeah, you know? that thing's crispy.
And then John looks over and starts moving over towards his gun. Or the gun that he was using that's on the ground. And once again, you can see the blue tape on the gun, which is quite cool. Also, they definitely are paying attention to the detail there. And then John says, "I had the bastard in my sight. I know I did." You know, I don't know who he's talking to by saying that, but you know, but he's short. He's definitely short of it. Maybe he had a little head trauma and decided to just start talking to himself.
Do you ever talk to yourself?
Of course. Don't you? Everyone does.
I only talk to myself when I have a very difficult assignment. I start muttering to myself.
Yeah. I sometimes will talk to myself, but not, you know, not full conversations. It's more like I'm Mark, reminding myself idiot. About something. Yeah. Stuff like that. I usually say, "Mark, you idiot." Yes. That's right.
Yeah, it's normally in a text to me.
Oh, come on. No. I wouldn't do that. So, you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No, beautiful. This is beautiful.
Yeah. So, I mean, the script is there isn't that much that's different here. And, I mean, the one main thing that's different here is when John is shooting at Miller, he says, "This is for Flight 114, mother." Which, man. I'm so glad they cut that out because it just doesn't make sense.
No.
You know, they and at this point in the script, Burke is still alive because John only killed one of the guys. So it was Burke that they sent to shoot between them. And they mentioned the fact that they switched their ammo clips and stuff like that. And that John keeps trying to figure out why nothing is happening when he's shooting. You know, and they say that Esperanza starts shooting with a pistol and then John's windshield is it explodes in his face, and then Burke fires on full auto, and then that's when the snowmobile careens out of control, and John is thrown from the seat, and then the snowmobile explodes. It says that it explodes along the runway wind register, so there's no, you know, flying snowmobile through the sky. And then Stuart, you know, motions for his men to get back together, and, you know, there's no line about him talking about the element of chance and things like that.
Yeah, that was a strange line.
Yeah. Well, it's trying to show his, you know, haughtiness by saying, okay, you know, we got rid of McClane. Now there's no one to stop us.
That's true.
Because we have to wait until next week to actually find out what's going on with these red and blue, pieces of tape and what's going on with blue light, you know, that hasn't been revealed to us yet. So, you know, when you're watching the movie, you think that you know, he's only concerned about McClane, and you wonder why, because you got these guys who are after him. I don't know. Mm. Yeah. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Aviation Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, adventure, misadventure, anecdote, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that's somehow related to airplanes or airports or things like that. So, Mark, you have a story for us?
I'm just tired of airports. You know, for years of my life, I would fly to like 20 cities a year to work. And, it's, you know, you're lucky to have the work, and it's great. But
are you George Clooney?
Yeah, I was up in the air a lot. I mean, I had good status. That was nice. But I remember it was 2016, Austin, Texas. I worked a Comic-Con there and was flying back, and Dolph Lundgren was in the airport. And I saw him, and I was talking to my wife, and I went, "Oh man, Dolph Lundgren's here." She's like, "Mark, hang up the phone and go talk to him." But see, I don't like talking. I've never done this before in my life. I'm like, screw it. I'm a big Dolph Lundgren fan. So I went and did it. Walked up to him. He's like, "Hey man, no pictures." And I was like, "No, it's fine." I was like, "Hey, you know, I loved Universal Soldier Regeneration. I really like Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning." I was like, "I dig your movie Command Performance. Like, when are you directing next?" And then he looked at me, put his coffee down. He's like, "What's your name?" And I'm like, "Mark." He's like, "Nice to meet you. I'm Dolph." And then we chatted for a little about his movies. Like, I think he was expecting me to be like Drago or He-Man. And then I talk about his smaller films. So he's like, "Oh, this guy's an actual fan." So we shook hands and we became buds that day. Oh, so yeah, cool. I won over Dolph Lundgren.
And you didn't even need to throw a punch.
Nope, there you go. Didn't even need to throw a punch, but that was a fun story.
Oh, wow, that's, you know, very cool.
Yeah, and I mean, other than that, it's just a lot of planes. Just go get coffee, go sit on the plane, just be really tired on the, you know, most of the time before, I remember after every weekend, big long weekend, I normally eat healthy, but like my celebratory thing was I would ditch all my coworkers. I'll go find a quiet bar and just get a burger and a beer and sit by myself and eat. I don't really eat burgers. Or like a chicken sandwich or something. But I would just always go get a sandwich at a bar and just sit by myself, because I feel like I was craving something like not healthy after a weekend of just being on my feet working 15 hours a day. So yeah, that's another memory I have.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Definitely not cool. It's kind of sad, but whatever.
No, I was thinking... No, it's great. It's great. So, Mark, you want to tell people where they can find Mark Hoffmeyer?
Yeah, Movies, Films, and Flicks, Movies, Films, and FLIX. And then there's a podcast, and then Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. And then check out the socials, do all that stuff.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and